none.
Okay, we'll proceed now to the fourth case on the call. Welcome back. Appeal number 082087, United States versus Ralph Ng. Mr. Malone.
Yes, sir.
Oh,
I was just going to get a drink if you
sure. Go, go. Have a drink. This is the fourth time.
Yes, it is. That was my opening statement, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Edward Malone on behalf of Appellant Ralph Wayne Engel. Your Honors, in April 2008, Wayne Engel was for the fourth time sentenced to serve a prison term 2.5 times the applicable guidelines range. That sentence is unreasonable and should be vacated. Since Mr. Engel was originally sentenced in 1999, district courts have been given increasing discretion to sentence outside the guidelines range. But any sentence, whether within or outside the guidelines, must be reasonable. And the guidelines remain an important benchmark in determining reasonableness. Just 2 years ago in Gall versus United States, the Supreme Court held that when a court imposes a sentence outside the guideline range, the justification must be, quote, sufficiently compelling to support the degree of variance, and a major variance must be supported by a more significant justification than a minor one. This sentence is unreasonable because it double counts or overcounts Mr. Engel's history of sexual abuse of minors. The court calculated a guideline range of between 97 and 121 months. Roughly 43 months of that was attributable to an enhancement for a pattern of activity involving sexual abuse or exploitation of a minor. Then the court added another 180 months on top of the sentence for the same activity. So the 223 months of the 300-month sentence, or two-thirds of the sentence, is attributable to conduct that Mr. Engel was never charged with, convicted of, much of which happened as much as 30 years ago, and some of which was not even criminal. Absolutely inappropriate, yes, but not criminal. I'd say the most the evidence showed was six incidents that could be qualified as sexual abuse. Now, by way of comparison, had those incidents been used to bump up Mr. Engel's criminal history category, and if you assigned 1 point to each, that would have produced a sentence of only 30 months above the guidelines range. By way of comparison, in the McCaffrey case, the priest defendant had hundreds of incidents of sexual abuse with as many as 40 victims, and that produced a five-level bump in his criminal history category. If Mr. Engel had been assigned a criminal category 6 like Mr. McCaffrey, his sentence would have only been 67 months above the guideline range. So how can you possibly justify a 180-month sentence or an additional 180 months above the guideline range when Mr. Engel's conduct, though serious, is not even comparable to McCaffrey's? And McCaffrey only received a 240-month sentence. Not surprisingly, the district court did not adequately justify this additional 180 months. In this court's 2007 decision remanding the case, it directed the sentencing court to explain why this case is more egregious than sexual exploitation of children generally. The district court explained why Mr. Engel's behavior is bad, but it did not explain why it's worse than that of other offenders.
Well, but he said Judge Moody has been on the bench since 1979, I believe, that he was the worst child predator he had come across in all his time as a district judge.
He did say that.
Strong statement.
It is a strong statement, Your Honor, though I think it points to a potential problem with that sort of analysis. And I'm sure Judge Moody has seen some bad offenders, but if Mr. Engel is the worst he'd seen, then I would say that he hasn't seen some of the worst based on what I've read in the cases. And if a judge applies only his experience, then we really get away from the goals of the guidelines of trying to sentence comparable defendants comparably. And I think, you know, when you look at a case like McCaffrey, you see someone whose conduct is far, far worse than Mr. Engel's.
Was the defendant's sentence in that McCaffrey case capped at 240?
It was, because of the statutory maximum.
Right. So that is a factor that distinguishes it from this situation.
Absolutely. But even so, as I say, if you treated Mr. Engel as having a criminal history category of 6 like McCaffrey, he would only, if you added, he would only get 67 more months to his guideline sentence, which is quite a bit different from McCaffrey.
Although the district court pointed out that another difference was that Engel was a producer of child pornography in addition to an abuser.
There is one incident that the district court drew an inference from the fact that Mr. Engel had a tape that he brought in from Mexico that Mr. Engel had produced child pornography. That was an inference that was also a part of the basis of conviction, but it was only one incident. And as I say, that is one of the incidents that, I would say that you could count in determining what a reasonable sentence would be, but it still doesn't justify adding 180 months. The closest the court came to...
Why doesn't it justify? That's that judge's opinion at the time, based upon his experience.
I understand that.
I do too.
the best explanation I can give, Your Honor, as I say, is there has to be some basis for saying, well, I'm going to count these incidents as justifying 180 months above the sentence, as opposed to the five-level, 43-month adjustment that's already accounted for by the guidelines. I don't know how Judge Moody came up with that 180 months. What I'm suggesting is one way you could do it is you could give him a higher criminal offense category like they did in McCaffrey. And if you count that incident, it's one incident as among several that justifies getting you up to a higher criminal offense category of, say, a 6, you're still only at 67 months above the guidelines range. We're talking about a sentence that is 2.5 times what the range is for the sentence of conviction. And that incident in Mexico is counted towards the adjustment. So it's already been taken into account. So the question is, how do you get to 180 months more? And I don't think that Judge Moody explained that.
Did you ask him to?
I did not ask
Wouldn't
him
that
to,
have been
to further.
Worthwhile at the time?
It might have been, Your Honor, but I did not ask him to further justify his written opinion, which he read from the
back. Yeah, but you can't ask the judge to read your mind.
No, but we had submitted memoranda before he reached his sentence. He knew what our positions were, and Judge Moody had been through the sentencing twice, so I think that he was well aware of.
But the answer was that he didn't agree with your point of view.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's
and
the whole argument.
I'm already into my rebuttal time, so I just want to take 1 minute of it to identify what I think Judge Moody said, the four reasons that he found this to be justifiable. One, you have more than two incidents. But that purely mathematical analysis of the guidelines is not an adequate basis because the adjustment under 2G2.B clearly contemplates a defendant to have more than two incidents. Second, he mentioned Mr. Engel's failure to participate in a treatment program that was addressed in the PSR. Mr. Engel has wanted to, but he's not eligible. Third, he cited the 2006 guidelines, but in fact the only issue on remand was the adequacy of the 2G2.2B4 enhancement, and that is no different today than it was in 1999. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. Berkowitz.
May it please the Court, Diane Berkowitz of the United States. Just to clarify a few statements that were made by counsel with respect to Cafferty, the 240-month sentence was pursuant to a plea agreement with the United States. That defendant entered into a plea, and his sentence was capped at 240 months. We don't have that situation here. The counsel also mentioned that it seems strange that this defendant should be considered one of the most vile defendants that Judge Moody has seen in his 20-some years on the bench. When you actually take a look at all the facts, though, it's pretty clear that he is. He is not simply, as the defendant in Griffith, a producer of child pornography, a possessor of child pornography with no evidence of any criminal background, any prior molestation convictions. Here you have a defendant who not only amassed quite a significant collection of pornography, he was also in the very nascent stages of the Internet using the social network as a means of trying to locate, attract victims, and he was doing it fairly successfully. In addition, he was actively molesting at the time he was on the Internet trolling for victims. And, as Judge Moody pointed out, he was also producing child pornography, traveling to Mexico, taking pornographic videos of children, and bringing it back into the United States. And there is evidence that was produced during the course of his defendant's trial in which he is in contact with one of his, or what he believes to be, his pornography distributor, advising him that he's going to be going to Mexico, that he's bringing this tape back, and indicating that he has interest in trading tapes. This is not a defendant who is unfamiliar with the system. This is not a defendant who is only caught, as I've indicated previously, with just possessing child pornography. This defendant is peripatetic in his criminal activity as it relates to children. Also, as Judge Moody noted, had this defendant, who has made repeated appeals of his sentence, had he been sentenced under the sentencing guidelines currently in effect, Judge Moody would be justifying why he's only receiving a 300-month sentence as opposed to a 360-month to life sentence. The sentencing guidelines have come a long way, and they certainly recognize now, more than they did in the very early stages of the Internet, what a danger someone like this defendant poses to children. Your Honor, if there are no further questions, the government would ask that the court affirm the sentence of this defendant. Thank you.
Well, can you just get to this, talk about this special condition of supervised release of which there was no notice to the defendant and why that shouldn't be remanded? Or how we can modify it here and not have to send it back again?
Well, there is a rule, I believe it's 32.2, Your Honor, that 32.1, the defendant could file a motion to have that amended. But I would note that it is reasonably foreseeable in this case that such a condition would be placed on this defendant.
With all these four times he's been sentenced, it's never occurred.
Well, Your Honor,
so, I mean,
defendant has filed these motions. He's filed these appeals, and he has to recognize that things will change and not necessarily in his favor. He should know and should have been well aware that given the fact he was convicted of Internet solicitation, that there would be a prohibition placed, or there could be a prohibition placed, on his access to the Internet. This is not a defendant who used the Internet for his business. He was a salesman and a welder. The fact that he would be prohibited for a discrete period of time while on his supervision from having access to the Internet is not an unreasonable prohibition. And it is not an unforeseeable prohibition for this defendant. If there are no further questions, the government would ask that this court affirm the sentence from below.
First, Your Honor, on the condition of probation, Your Honor is correct. This is the fourth sentencing. It had never been imposed before, and part of the reason it would not be foreseeable was because this court has previously held that such broad prohibitions are totally improper.
But why? It seems to me that we have this, one of the issues in the preceding case, a condition like this, after all this time passes, and this fellow gets out of prison far into the future, he can go into court then and have the conditions modified. You'll be a lot older. I'm a different person now. It's not necessary. Why do we have to get involved here and sending this back for a fifth time? And you do have that open to you.
I guess you're right, Your Honor. The problem is we have a condition of probation that is, in fact, inappropriate. I suppose the court could fashion a mandate that makes clear that that this is inconsistent with the court's prior decisions, and the, you know, we should have an opportunity to address alternatives. But the fact is that this condition of prohibition, this condition of probation, was procedurally and substantively improper.
So if we were to say that, but then say we affirm and leave it to the district court in 2022 or something to revisit this issue if the situation has changed.
As a practical matter, the district court probably is going to have to revisit the issue because, as Your Honor points out, the technology will have changed if Mr. Engel does not get out before then.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel, and the case is taken under advisement, and we proceed now.